You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
First down now for the Toronto 17. And Mazzola into the end zone to Tasker. Touchdown! Mazzola stands in again, has all day. Looks down to the goal line. Brandon Boggs, touchdown! Here comes the rush. Mazzola gets it away to Green. He's got room to run. Alex Green up the sidelines. Touchdown, Hamilton! Lots of time for Mazzola. Throws over to Luke Banks. Reaching up, grabs the ball. He is gone.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, Pigskin Pete has stepped down effective immediately. What do you think, buddy? Think of moving back to Southern Ontario and becoming Podski Pete?
First of all, I think that Dan did a great job for the last 10 years. I haven't been around Hamilton for about a long time now, but I know that he filled in great for a guy that we all consider Pigskin Pete growing up. But listen, I think I'm a little too skinny to be Pigskin Pete. I think we need a plumper guy out there such as yourself.
Ooh. Yeah, I you know what? Maybe I will throw my name in the hat. I do 100% agree with you that I think Dan did a great job as Pigskin Pete. And like you, we grew up with a certain Pigskin Pete. And when we found out there was going to be a new one, at least I was like, oh, a new – like. I don't know how I feel about that, but once you got over it, I thought he was excellent in the role. I wish him the best going forward, but we're going to get a new one, and I don't know, maybe we should do a co-act, and maybe you can do the Pigskin Pete stuff on the screen from Edmonton, and I can be the guy live on the field in the stadium. What do you think?
I think that's a great idea. I'd love to be a small part of that tradition.
Indeed. Okay. Last week, you and I sat down here, and you mocked me endlessly for stealing the no-fly zone nickname from the Denver Broncos. You said, I don't know, amongst other things, I think you called me a jackass, but you called me a jackass so many times, I can't remember if it was about that. So you said you'd come up with your own name, and you said you'd come up with it in 24 hours. And we sit here now, not 24 hours later, but 7 days later, and you came up with nothing. So should I make fun of you now?
Yeah, you can make fun of me. I mean, you stole your name, but I was just trying to rack my brain around Ticats, secondary, a good nickname, and I couldn't come up with anything. So we put it to the fans, and we're going to narrow it down to two here.
We are. So we're sticking with No Fly Zone. That's my pick. I think it's an awesome name. Stolen or not, I think it fits this secondary very well. So we put
What's
it out
the other
on
the, one, Josh?
We put
What's
it out
the other
on
one?
The Twitter machine. We said, hey, fans, come up with some names. We'll pick the best one. We'll have it go up against No Fly Zone in a poll, and that is what we will call the new Ticat secondary. So we had a bunch of people whose names I did not write down, which is my mistake, but a couple people voted for Restricted Airspace. We had Bro Show and Co. We had the Air Battery Defense, the Den / the Tiger's Den. We had the No Ozone, the Airtight Zone, Air Prophylactic, which was very inventive, and then one that I think might somehow border on the offensive to some, Jerry's Kids. Look, I think some of these are really good. I think some of them are funny. I think there's no way we can call them Jerry's Kids. I think that would go over like a fart in church. But Mike, these are the names we have. I'm going to let you pick one, and this will be your official name that we will go with in the battle of what to call the Ticats secondary. So which one are you going to pick, my friend?
I'm going to go with Restricted Airspace. Now, I do like a couple of those. Some of those are pretty damn funny, too. I like Bro Show and Co. That's pretty cool. But, that seems like a little slap in the face to the rest of the guys in the secondary. So I'm going to have to go with Restricted Airspace.
All right. So it's the No-Fly Zone versus the Restricted Airspace. And when we sit down next week to record, we will officially have a new Ticats secondary nickname, or we will just go with the one that I think is best, which is mine. So we'll be up there on the Twitter machine after the show is out. You guys can all vote, and then we can put this to bed, put this to rest.
Everyone vote. Everyone must vote.
Everyone, just don't vote for Kodos or Kang. I don't remember which one won.
Oh, yes.
Oh, don't blame me. I voted for Kodos.
Yeah. I almost went over my head, but I got it there eventually.
All right. What is not going to go over your head, though, Mike, is let's talk about this last game. Three in a row for our boys in black and gold. Our Hamilton Tiger Cats went into Toronto and put a wee bit of a whooping on the double blue, beating the Argos 36-25 last Saturday. With that win, the Ticats now take home the Ballard Trophy, get themselves back over 500 at 6-5, move into a tie for first place with the Ottawa Redblacks, and deal a pretty darn devastating blow to the Argos and their hopes of making the playoffs and defending their Grey Cup title. So, all in all, pretty good game for the Ticats, eh, Mike?
It was an absolutely gorgeous game for the Ticats. I mean, you just look at this team overall, how they performed, offense, defense. Two in a row against the Argos. It's always good to beat the Argos twice in a row, which, you know, it's hard to beat any team twice in a row in this league. So to take it to our arch rivals down the QEW is always a beautiful thing.
So after the game, I wrote my piece for Three Down Nation, and my headline read that with this win, the Ticats proved that they are for real. Now, our good friend, listener of the show, and fellow podcaster over at the Three Down Nation Greencast, Joel Gaston, took a bit of exception to this, and I kind of get where he's coming from. He was kind of like, every time, you know, we think we have this league figured out, something happens to turn it on its ear. I dubbed that last week the Rowdy Piper corollary. You, Mike, keep your garbage takes about Hot Rod to yourself, please, and just focus on the football. But I think this game, and in the manner in which the Ticats won, never trailing, putting together scoring drives, every time the Argos kind of made it close, I think it shows that the Ticats have taken that next step and should be considered a Grey Cup contender and, quote-unquote, for real. What say you, buddy?
I'm not ready just yet to claim them for real. You know, it was against the Argonauts two in a row. I know it's been three in a row, but, you know, we haven't beat that high end. I know we beat Edmonton twice, so you know, that's a very good thing. Their defense is a little rough, though, but the test is next week, my friend. If they can beat the Calgary Stampeders next week, which they haven't beat in, you know, four decades, it seems, if they can beat them, I will fully trust in this team. I will believe that this team is a true contender for the Grey Cup. Now, do I think that they can make it to the Grey Cup, you know, in this East Division? Yes. But do I think that they are necessarily going to win the Grey Cup? I'm not sure about that.
Mike, you and I are going to be at the Grey Cup together. That's going to cancel out the curse. The curse of always seeing the Argos win goes away if you and I are together. It's like two negatives making a positive, right? So
I certainly hope so.
I'm just saying. And anyway, I appreciate that. But let's talk about this game and what we liked and what we disliked about it, because there was a lot to like and a little bit to dislike. So why don't you get us started with the things you liked about this game, buddy?
Well, yeah, there was a ton of things to like, man. I mean, let's be honest. But one of the things I liked was the resiliency. You know, every time the Argos scored a touchdown or made it close, the Ticats would answer right back with a touchdown or a field goal. They'd make it a little bit further away from them to grasp. So I'm going to go – the first thing I really liked was the resiliency to just pull away every time.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting to watch, because they went up 7-0, and I think the Argos chipped away with a couple field goals, and the Ticats put another touchdown on the board. And the Argos scored a touchdown. Ticats kicked a field goal or scored a touchdown. Like, it seemed like every time the Argos were about to make that next move to get themselves ahead, the Ticats shut the door on it. Whether the defense made a play or the offense came down and scored, it always seemed like – and this is part of where I kind of came with the Ticats are for real thing, is that this is what good teams do. There was no lulls in this game, right? Like, there were parts of the game where the offense wasn't scoring or wasn't necessarily picking up a ton of first downs, but it was ebbs and flows as opposed to peaks and valleys. And I think we've seen a lot of peaks and valleys with this team, where they'll score 14 points in the first quarter and then do nothing for the next 22 minutes. And then all of a sudden, like the Saskatchewan games, for instance, they get out to a big lead in the first half, and then by midway through the third quarter, they're trailing and you're kind of like, what the hell happened?
Yeah,
I think we're seeing a transformation with this team, and you're bringing up the resiliency. I think it's part of that transformation, where we've seen them now make comebacks to win games in both game, in the game against the Argos and the previous week's game against Edmonton. And now in this game, we kind of see them, they take the lead and they don't necessarily like blow the team out, but they, at no point did they let them really take it, like the Argos never got a chance to sort of take the, like, they didn't take the lead. The Ticats led this game from their first score until the end of the game. So, like, I feel like that's another thing that good teams do, and the Ticats are showing that they can be a good, if not great, team right now.
They did do that, but, I mean, you look at the two games against Saskatchewan, top two defense in this league, didn't perform that great. You look at the first game of the season against Calgary, you know, another top two defense. You could interchange those between one and two, Saskatchewan's defense, Calgary's defense. But those are the top two defenses in the league, and they did not perform exceptionally well with those guys. So that's one of the reasons why I'm holding off to say they're for real yet. Now we're going to find out. We're going to play Calgary's defense next week, and they haven't been the best in the last couple of weeks, but they're still a pretty darn good defense. So that's, we got to wait until they put up those big numbers against a really, really great defense.
Okay, okay. What else from this game did you like, pal?
I like the red zone defense. I know that they gave up some touchdowns in this game, but there was a couple of turnovers deep in the Ticats' end of the field, and they held the Argos to 3 points on a couple occasions. So if they let those guys score touchdowns on those, then we're in big trouble, but they did not allow that at all. So once again, you know, the Ticats defense has been great for most of the season, and once again, they perform really well.
Yeah, it's really hard to dislike what Jerry Glanville has done with this unit. And week in and week out, I finally feel with this defense, and I haven't felt this way in a few years, like if they got to go and win a game, like they got to make a stop, I feel like they can do it. And in this one, it wasn't necessarily like they had to go and win a game, but like the Argos, I think they scored a touchdown midway through the third, maybe it was even late in the fourth quarter. And it was like, okay, it's still a two-score game. The Argos got the ball back, and it's like we have to get them off the field. They get them off the field. This defense is doing stuff that we see elite defenses do. And yeah, not allowing a ton of points in the red zone is one of those things.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the points, first quarter 6, second quarter 7, third quarter 6, fourth quarter 6. I mean, even for this defense to allow 25 points seems like a lot if we look back at previous games. But yeah, they were great once again. And another thing I liked was the offensive line play. You know, on Mazzoli's, a couple of Mazzoli's touchdown passes, he was sitting back there. He had a ton of Mississippis or Steamboats, whatever you want to say. He was just sitting back there in the pocket. You know, he was moving around, but he was just trying to make a decision. And that's always great to see when the offensive line is performing the way that they are right now. Now, they kind of faded off a little bit later in the game. I felt like Mazzoli was under pressure a little bit more. But for the most part, I thought this offensive line played a great game.
Well, I'm going to use that to dovetail into the things I liked, because the offensive line play played a big role in one of Brandon Banks' two touchdown catches. It was the first one of the afternoon. Mazzoli, he's dancing around a little bit to, like, separate himself, but holy smokes, he could have made a sandwich back there with the protection he got on Banks' first touchdown catch, I mean. And Brandon Banks, just once again, like, what can this guy not do? 6 catches for 153 yards, 2 TDs. And I want to tell you his numbers, Mike, since last Labor Day, the last 21 games that Brandon Banks has played. He leads the league in yards with 1,992. He has 128 catches and 14 touchdowns. This guy, and I know we say it every week, and it's becoming boring for me to say, but we have to just marvel at how wonderful he has played and how he has transformed his game. He is, look, I Darrell Walker's out there. I know Duke Williams is putting up some big numbers. There's a lot of good receivers in this league. I would put Brandon Banks up against any single one of them. And that 78-yard TD catch that he had in this one might have been one of the best catch and throws I have ever seen, man. Mazzoli just tosses it to the spot where he believes Banks is going to be. And in between 4 Argos defenders, 5'7" Brandon Banks goes up and gets it, comes down untouched, and he was gone. And, like, just if there's something Brandon Banks can't do on a football field, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I want to talk about his other touchdown, too. You know, Mazzoli was sitting back there for a long time, and, you know, Banks knows what to do, like the scramble rule. You know, when the play the play didn't break down necessarily, but he broke his route and made a turn to the end zone. And, you know, Mazzoli and Banks, they have a really good connection right now. They just know where each other's going to be. So I think that says a lot about Banks' football intelligence.
And let's talk about Jeremiah Mazzoli, because in this game, I thought he was outstanding. He didn't put up like massive numbers because he only threw 25 passes in this game, but he completed 18 of them. And for you math majors at home, that's 72%, which if Jeremiah Mazzoli's completed 70% of his passes, that's a good afternoon. He throws for 307 yards, four touchdowns, and maybe the most important of all, zero interceptions. He also added 51 yards on the ground. He now has 16 TDs to 11 INTs. One of the things that all his detractors have pointed out, oh, well, he throws too many interceptions and he throws more interceptions than touchdowns. Well, for the time being, that's a dead comment. And I don't know, but I want to talk to you about this because this is something I've been batting in my head back and forth. Brandon Banks, Jeremiah Mazzoli, those have got to be the two front runners for the East nominee for MOP, right? And which one would you pick?
I'm picking Mazzoli. I think that, you know, Banks has been amazing right now, but Mazzoli's the leader of this offense. He's the guy that makes this offense turn. So, you know, the touchdown interception ratio hasn't been there, but I think it's starting to climb now. You know, like you said, 16 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. I think that's just going to get better as the season goes along. But at this point, you know, you just look at his performances. I mean, every single game, it seems like he's over 300 yards. He has a good completion percentage. I got to go with Jeremiah Mazzoli.
Yeah, I want to say he's either second or third. I think he's second in completion percentage on the year, which another knock on his game was his completion percentage isn't very good. To me, man, it's really tough to pick between these two because does Mazzoli make Banks or does Banks make Mazzoli, or are they both so good that they don't make each other, but they do make each other? You know what I mean? Like they're just you mentioned earlier, they're so in sync with one another that it's just it's so pretty to watch. They're both on the brink of breaking Tiger Cats single season records. Banks for 100 yard games in the season, Mazzoli for 300 yard passing games in the season, with seven games left for each of them barring injury. I can't imagine that these guys aren't record holders. And it's crazy to think in so little time that Jeremiah Mazzoli has been a starter, how few starts he's had. He's the single season or single game record holder for completions in a row. He's tied for consecutive 300-yard games. He's about to break a Ticats franchise record for 300-yard games. He's probably going to break the franchise record for passing yards in a season. Like, he hasn't been the starter that long, and he's all over the record book.
Yeah, it's been a phenomenal stretch for him. And, you know, you look at the passing leaders in the league as well. He's only second behind Mike Riley, and we all know how great Mike Riley is. So, I mean, this guy is he's on pace, in my opinion, for an MOP year, or at least an MOP award from the East Division.
Yeah, hopefully he's East. I can't see him winning the league award, I think. You look at those
yeah,
two
that's
QBs.
That's got to go to Mike.
Yeah, those two. Whoever wins the West nominee between Riley and Mitchell, who I know you're not a big fan of Bo Levi Mitchell, but he's really turned it on of late, and I thought he was fantastic.
He's been good.
In the rematch between the Esks and the Stamps, that awesome shootout that you got to see in person, you lucky SOB. But yeah, I think whoever gets there, and I think it's Mike Riley, I think they win the award. But you know what? Mazzoli can be East MOP and Grey Cup champion. I think that – how do you like the sound of that?
Yeah, I take the Grey Cup over him being MOP any day of the week.
I'm sure he would as well. The last thing that I want to shout out in this, and this is kind of a season-long thing for me. We haven't talked about him enough. I think Don Unamba, who got thrust into the Sam linebacking position – because of some injuries, Mario Cooper was going to be there. Jackson Bennett was going to be there. DJ May was going to be there. They all got hurt. Unamba gets the call, and I think he has had an all-star caliber season at Sam. If the league would get their head on straight, and when you vote for all-stars, you voted for a Mike, a Sam, and a Will, I feel like Unamba is the runaway Sam linebacker, for the East at least. He has been awesome. In this game, he had a nice pressure that forced an overthrow by McLeod Bethel-Thompson that ended in a field goal. He got some pressure that forced a punt later in the game, and he had a critical pass knockdown on a third down where he blitzed, and McLeod Bethel-Thompson throws the pass. He knocks it down, gets the Argos off the field. Essentially, it was the game-sealing knockdown because I think it came some very – not super late, but later-ish in the fourth quarter, kind of the Argos. I think at the time the final score might have been what it was, or maybe it was a little closer, but it was kind of the – that was kind of the nail in their coffin. They didn't get that first down. They didn't get to continue their drive. They didn't score any points. That was kind of it. I just think he's been fantastic, and this team has been looking for a Sam linebacker for so bloody long. It's like since what? Eric Harris left to go to the NFL after what? I think it was 2016, 2015. They finally have it in Don Unamba, and I just think for the season he's played well. I think in this game he plays well. And I don't think he's getting enough press for how well he's been playing as a Ticats Sam linebacker.
Yeah, he's been outstanding. I think the trio that we have at linebacker is amazing. You got Simone Lawrence, you got Larry Dean, and you got Yuamba. I mean, you can't go wrong with those three guys. And Yuamba's been stepping up huge, especially in this last game. He, like you mentioned, those three big plays that mattered huge in this game. So I'm totally with you on him.
Something I do want to talk about, and I guess we can go into what we didn't like about this game. This is kind of a year-long thing for me, and I think you and I, as well as other people out there who watch the team, have kind of glossed over because the secondary's been really good. The linebackers we just discussed have been very good. The defensive line, Mike, hasn't been great this season, and it really kind of was highlighted against the Argos. Like the Ticats as a whole are second last in the league in sacks. They got none against Toronto, and they didn't really get a ton of pressure. Now, they had the awesome third down stop, which, to be fair, was kind of able to happen because James Franklin, for some reason, bobbled the snap. But they got the stop, and that's to their credit. And then Jamal Westerman had, like, I don't know if it was brilliant or insane, but his celebration where
I loved it.
He's doing
I loved
it. Dude, full body spasm. It was so weird, but yeah. I kind of dug it. But yeah, I just feel like the D line has, like, with all the talent they have, with Ted Laron, who I know didn't play in this game because he was watching the birth of his first child, which is pretty good for him. So congratulations, Big Teddy, on having your first kid. But Justin Capicotti's a good player. Jamal Westerman's a good player. Adrian Tracy, who didn't play in this one, is a good player. But they're just – I don't know if the rest of the defense is allowing it for the Ticats to not get all these sacks and pressures. But what do you think, man? Am I off on the D-line here? Because I feel like they just haven't really done a ton this season.
No, it's on my list as well. You're right. They haven't been getting the sacks. And I know it's not all about sacks. You know, the pressures count too. And there was a couple pressures in this game that made a big difference. Mick BLT had – I believe it was SJ Green on a corner route in the end zone. We got some pressure, got a hit. He had to throw it early. So occasionally they're getting through, but like you mentioned, all that talent, it should be better. And could you imagine if this D line starts getting consistent pressure on the QB with the secondary and the linebackers that we have? I mean, we would be absolutely deadly. So it is a bit of a nitpick. You know, there's not a lot to dislike about this game or this team right now. But if I was going to pick, I'd have to point at the D-line as a little bit underwhelming this season.
Yeah, like, look, the Ticats have won three in a row. They dispatched the Argos twice. They've essentially ended Toronto's chances of going to the playoffs. These are all good things. But they're not a perfect team. And I know at the top of this I said I think they're for real. But there are still areas where they can improve. There's an area where you think our quarterback can improve, Mike. And what's your kind of one big... I don't like it from this game.
Well, Mazzoli dropped back. Like, he gets nervous or whatever. He feels the pressure, and then he just, like, runs backwards about 30, it seems like 30, 40 yards. He's not going to make a play like that. Like, you'd have to throw the ball 60 yards to get to the first down marker. I wish he would stop doing that. Maybe, you know, I love his effort. I love that he never really gives up on a play, but sometimes you just got to throw the ball out of bounds and go on to the next down. You know what I mean?
He plays quarterback like I used to play when I played Madden. I never was able to step up in the pocket. I don't know why it was like my innate. It's like people are coming at me, run backwards. And I that's how I played the game. And like usually I would play with Michael Vick because Michael Vick was a beast in Madden because, you know, Michael Vick mm-hmm. was freaking phenomenal.
2004, Michael Vick was like the best Madden player of all time.
Best video game character, the most unstoppable video game character of all time. But let's not talk about that. I'm with you, man. I see he does it, and like sometimes he'll make a play. Like there was one in this game where he goes back and back and back, and he throws to Luke Tasker, and Tasker makes that, you know, brilliant catch on the sideline, taps his foot down, and you hear him go, "That's an effing first down," and it's like, "Lucky baby, you the down marker you're looking at is where the play started. The first down marker is 7 yards behind you." And that's because of how far Mazzoli went back. He could only complete it to make it like third and seven. And it was like, they're arguing over this. I'm in the stands watching it going like, guys, it's still third down. Like whether it's a catch or not, it's not really that big a deal because you gained like 4 yards. But I see what you mean, man. It can be frustrating. For me, the frustrating thing about this game, and it's kind of been a little bit of a trend the last few weeks, where the hell has Terrence Tolliver been? This is a guy who has 1,000-yard potential, all-star potential, no catches and no targets against the Argos. On the year, just 27 catches for 400 yards and one single touchdown. He started the year pretty hot. He had three games of 70 yards or more, but hasn't recorded more than three catches or 52 yards in a game since week four against Saskatchewan. I know he moves around the formation a lot. Like, you don't, he used to be strictly the boundary wide receiver, but we see him go to the wide side. We see him go to the slot. Like, June Jones moves these receivers around. And I know he's working his way back from injury, even though, like, it's over a year since he tore his ACL. Still, you sometimes you see guys with knee injuries, they don't exactly come back and light things up. But with the Ticats losing both Chris Williams and Jalen Saunders to injury recently, I would have thought that Terrence Tolliver would have been a bigger part of the offense. And I'm kind of saying this because the last time we sat here and discussed a receiver, and it's like, what has, like, why are they not using Luke Tasker? He's been on fire since. So I'm kind of hoping we get some Podsky juju going here. And maybe us saying, like, hey, man, what's going on with Terrence Tolliver? We watch on Saturday. Terrence Tolliver has, you know, five catches for 120 yards and two TDs.
Well, it's interesting. I'm looking at the receiving numbers here, and there's only four names on this list, Josh. I mean, we got Banks with 153 yards, Tasker with 91 yards, Alex Green, who's not even a receiver, a running back, obviously, three catches, 44 yards, and Mike Jones at two catches for 19 yards. Yeah, exactly. And you think that – I know that there's been injuries, but to have, you know, just four players catch the ball – it's a little strange. I thought for sure that he would have got more looks. You know, they didn't even target him once. So, yeah, I don't know what's going on with that. You know that he has the talent. You know that he's a special player. He's the only guy that's over 6 foot on this team. You think he'd be getting some red zone looks maybe. But, you know, if Brandon Banks and Luke Tasker are taking it all and we're winning, I'm not going to complain, right?
No, and, like, if you watch, go back and watch the game as I did, you'll see Banks is TD. He gets in there. Terrence Tolliver's in there celebrating with him. On the sidelines, he's dapping him up. Like, it's not like Tolliver is complaining about not getting the ball because, as, like, he's a receiver. He wants a football, but he also wants to win. Like, he wants to win a championship. And you can see that in him. And I think that's what you see in this team as a whole, is that if a guy's not having a good game or a guy's not getting the ball like he should, or whatever it is on the defense or in special teams, they're winning football games. And I can't imagine anyone on this team is upset about winning three in a row, whether they're the guy that caught for 150 yards or the guy that didn't see the ball at all. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I guess you take the good, you take the bad, and, you know, it's facts of life or whatever. But I'm hoping that us kind of bringing this out will get Terrence Tolliver more involved in the offense in the next few weeks. Okay, Mike, it's time to hand out our Podsky Player of the Week. But before we do that, we have to give a shout-out to one Brandon Banks, as he was named a CFL top performer for his game against the Argos. I was a little surprised that Banks was given a nod, considering I thought, if not all three, but I probably thought all three were going to come from that game that you were at between Calgary and Edmonton. Bo Levi Mitchell throws for almost 500 yards and is not named a top performer. Like, I know he threw a few interceptions and the team lost, but holy smoke, what does a guy have to do if he throws, I think he throws like 497 yards or something? How is that not a top performer? But either way, it went to Banks, and I think it is well-deserved. But now we have to give out our Player of the Week. So, Mike, take it away. Who's our boy this week?
Our boy this week is none other than Jeremiah Mazzoli. The guy played in a phenomenal game, 18 to 25, 307 yards, four touchdowns, zero interceptions, and a long of 78 yards, a 72% completion percentage. This guy was just on fire this game. I know, like, it's hard to pick between the two, Brandon Banks or Jeremiah Mazzoli, because Banks obviously had a monster game. There was a couple times, or many times this season, that it could have went to Mazzoli, and we didn't give it to him. So I think he's deserved a Podsky Player of the Week.
Couldn't say it better myself, buddy. So let's get into the Ticats news. And Sunday... And then again on Monday, team signed a couple of receivers. One didn't take us hugely by surprise, but I feel like the other one did. Marquay McDaniel is back in black and gold, and so is Chad Owens. Now, we don't usually get many things right on this show, but a few weeks ago, when Chris Williams went down, we sat here and discussed possible replacements for him, and I brought up, hey, what about this speedy, smaller guy? Played for June Jones at Hawaii, has played for the Ticats before, has won an MOP, and you went, Oh, that makes sense. Basically, in Mike speak, you called me a super genius, just like you did in the text message that
Exactly.
you
Yeah.
refused to acknowledge. You said I was right. That is essentially calling me the smartest man on earth. That is at least how I read it, sir. But I wasn't surprised by Owens coming in, mostly because we kind of called it. What about you? Were you surprised that they brought in Chad Owens?
A pinch, just a pinch, Josh.
Yeah.
I mean, because he wasn't, you just didn't hear his name anymore. It's like he didn't exist anymore. But when you think about it, like we talked about last week, he's a Hawaiian guy. June Jones is, I'm not sure if he's from Hawaii, but I know that he lives there now. June Jones coached him, apparently. I didn't know that he actually coached him in Hawaii. I thought they might have been off a couple years, but yeah, he coached him. So he's a smaller guy, just like June Jones likes, fast guy. So yeah, overall, I wasn't that shocked, and I was actually happy about the signing because I think there's a lot of potential there. I think that he could, if he stays healthy, I know that's the big thing. If he stays healthy, I think he can contribute to this team. And let's not forget the last time he was a Tiger Cat. I mean, he had a monster year in 2016, I believe. I know it's 2 more years. He's 2 more years older, but he hasn't been beat up as much. He didn't play last year with the Riders. He came into camp. He got cut. He hasn't been playing since. So if this guy's healthy, I think he can do some big things for the Tiger Cats.
Yeah, he had almost 1,000 yards and like 5 or 6 touchdowns in 12 games, I think it was. He nearly made me have to buy a Chad Owens jersey. That's how well he played. I think you remember that bet from when he signed. But McDaniel, man, that kind of took me by surprise. But when you hear he was coaching at McMaster, they needed a guy, they called him up. He's allowed to still coach at Mac while playing. He himself said in an interview that he didn't feel like he could play a full season, but Ticats maybe have 10 games left, and he feels like he's got 10 games left in him. And if you do the math, that's 7 regular season games, but that's only two play. He only needs 2 playoff games because I think the Ticats are going to get the bye, but that's neither here nor there. But if they don't, that's 3 playoff games. He's basically saying this Ticats team's going to get to the Grey Cup, which I like to hear from the players, you know what I'm saying? But this took me
Yes.
by, like, I was sitting with my brother and my dad ready to watch some NFL football, perusing through Twitter, and it's like the Ticats signed Markway McDaniel. Holy smokes! Immediately texted my best friend who goes to the games with me. He bought a Markway McDaniel jersey way back when McDaniel was a rookie with the Ticats. I said, "You dusting
Nice.
off the jersey?" He goes, "Hey, if he's playing on Saturday, I will absolutely wear it." But yeah, that one shocked me. What about you?
I was very surprised by that. Like it kind of makes sense now that you think about it. He was already in Hamilton, but I thought he was done. I didn't know if it was because he felt like he couldn't play anymore, or maybe because of the comments he made after the Grey Cup game, kind of throwing his teammate under the bus a bit. I thought that was one of the reasons why teams weren't bringing him in. But listen, I've always liked Markway McDaniel. I thought he was great when he was with Hamilton. Obviously, he had a spectacular career with the Calgary Stampeders. He's Mr. Dependable. He kind of reminds me of Luke Tasker a bit. Just the way that he just plays the game. He's so clutch, he's so professional, all that good stuff. So to add him to this roster, I think is a great thing. We lose some great receivers, and I'm it sucks that they're injured for the year, but we bring in some veteran guys that can add some leadership.
Yeah, it shows me, Mike, that the Ticats are going to win it all. Like, not that they're going to, but they're trying to. Like, if you think, okay, maybe we can roll with some of the rooks or stuff like that, maybe you're a middle of the road team, you don't make these moves. But these are moves that teams that are trying to load up for a playoff run and a deep playoff run, they do. They go out and they grab veteran players for a half season. Let's call this what it is. These are not long-term solutions. I think these guys know they're not long-term solutions. They know that this is essentially the CFL version of a rent-a-player. You pick up a guy in the NHL at the trade deadline, you plug him in for about 6 or 8 weeks, maybe you go win yourself a Stanley Cup, and then that guy goes and plays somewhere else or he retires. That's what these are, right? Like, Chad Owens is not going to be a Ticat next year. Markway McDaniel is not going to be a Ticat this year. So these moves tell me that the Ticats are going to try to put all the chips in the middle of the table to win it all and think that they can. And as a fan, Mike, that makes me really happy because the team looks at it and goes, look, we get a couple of pieces here. We like what we're doing. We can add these guys because we're going on a run. That's a good sign as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I think they're right that they should feel that way because you look at the Eastern Division right now. I mean, Ottawa technically is ahead of the Tiger Cats because they have the game breaker. They beat the Tiger Cats earlier in the season, but they look like crap, to be honest. They've looked like garbage the last couple of weeks. They lost to Montreal. Maybe Montreal is on the rise, but listen, the offense of the Ottawa Red Blacks just isn't good right now, and they're the only contender in the East with the Tiger Cats. So for them to be signing these players is a very good sign, and it does say that they're throwing all their marbles, you know, in the sack or whatever the saying is. They're going for it all, Josh, so I'm excited about that.
So they signed Marquay McDaniel. They signed Chad Owens. But the name we don't hear here is someone that Ticat fans would love them to sign, and that's Bakari Grant. And, Mike, you had an opinion about Bakari Grant on Twitter that the man himself did not take too kindly to.
No, I sent this tweet out a while ago, and I thought, you know, I said that he was slower than molasses in January, and maybe that was a little bit harsh. He's not that slow. But he came back at me today on Twitter saying some things, you know. And listen, I'm going to find the tweet right now. If you could just give me a moment here, Josh.
I will give you more than a moment. Discussing your feud with another football. You've already beefed with James Wilder Jr., and now you're beefing with Bakari Grant. Mike, I got your back. You're my boy. But I don't know if Mike and Josh as a tag team can take Bakari and JWJ. I think they'd kick our asses.
Well, that's a definite for sure. I'd say that's a for sure to that. Okay, so this is my exact tweet that I sent out. It was yesterday, actually. Bakari is a good receiver, but he's slower than molasses in January. That's not June's style when it comes to receivers. He likes speed. Obviously, I mean, I'm not blowing the lid off the case here, people. Bakari has never made logical sense. Chad does. And then he came back at me and he said, "Hey, Mike, my at is BakariCran84. And teams never brought me in to run past people. They bring me in to hit people in the mouth and convert second downs. I always make logical sense, maybe not financial. Hashtag check the facts. Hashtag know your value." And that has 66 likes. So, you know, people love Bakari Grant, and that's fine. But, you know, I didn't think my tweet was too malicious or anything like that. Maybe this slower than molasses in January thing was a little harsh, but I thought it was kind of a funny thing to say. But I'm just going to say a couple things here. I don't players. You know, I'm not going to give my opinion about a player if it's negative and at them. I think that's kind of a troll move. All I'm saying is he doesn't fit the system. June Jones would have signed this guy already. I mean, look at the players he signed. McDaniel, a guy that was coaching, a guy that said he probably doesn't even have a season left in him. Chad Owens, a quote-unquote injury-prone player. These guys are both under 6 foot, and they're both fast. Like, McDaniel's not the fastest guy in the world, but Owens has always been known as a very fast player. You look at the other players. Look at the starting receivers on the Tiger Cats. Mike Jones, 6 foot. Banks, 5'7". Tasker, 5'11". Saunders, 5'9". The only exception is Terrence Tolliver. We already have a Bakari Grant. Terrence Tolliver is 6'5". He is our Bakari Grant. We do not need him. And I'm not saying he's not a good player, right? Like, I think that teams could use him, such as Calgary. You know, they've had troubles with injuries in the receivers. Edmonton, Darrell Walker's out. Winnipeg has just been not good.
Oh, man, receivers-wise. The fact that Winnipeg hasn't signed him, because I agree with you. I like Bakari Grant. I think if he came to Hamilton, people would be over the moon about it, and I think he would find a role in this offense. But I think you're 100% right, Mike. He doesn't fit what June Jones likes to do. And I saw someone come at you about, like, well, if that's what June Jones thinks, he shouldn't be coaching. And that, to me, is an idiotic statement because different coaches have different philosophies. And the Ticats have won 3 in a row. They're 6-5. They're tied for first place in the division. What June Jones is doing is working. And, yeah, there's certain players that I think you make exceptions for. If you were to tell me that, if say Darrell Walker came out and said, "Look, I'm leaving Edmonton and I want to come to Hamilton," and June Jones said, "Well, he doesn't fit my system," well, to me, I have a problem with that because Darrell Walker should fit every system. Bakari Grant is a very, I hate to say this because he's not a system-dependent player, but he doesn't fit what June Jones likes to do. Does he fit what Calgary likes to do? Absolutely. Does he fit what Winnipeg should like to do? Absolutely. Was he like when I put out my piece on 3Down about guys that the Ticats could look to replace him? Bakari Grant's just a 1,000-yard receiver that was a free agent. That's why he was included in that. But when you make the case for the other guys, like it makes like that's not who June Jones wants. He doesn't want sort of a mid-level and speed-wise player. Andy Fantuz did not get re-signed in the offseason. And yes, he later went out and retired, but he said in his retirement speech, like, I retired after I saw Ricky Ray get hurt. That was in what, week 2, week 3? Like, he still wanted to play football. But Andy Fantuzzi, not a speed demon. They already have some guys who can get balls over the middle. That's Luke Tasker's bread and butter. So you got Tasker, and I know Tasker and Fantuzzi work together. I know Tasker, Fantuzzi, and Grant all work together. But I agree with you, Mike. Vicari Grant is a good player, and he should be playing football in the Canadian Football League. He just didn't make sense schematically for the Hamilton Ticats.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. I like Vicari when he was with the Ticats. You know, I still remember that great catch that he made in the East Semi against Montreal in that great game years ago. I'm a big fan of Vicari. I just don't think he fits in with what June Jones wants to do. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
All right, let's move on to some CFL news, and let's talk Devere Posey coming back to the CFL, but not with the Argos. He signs with the BC Lions. He was cut by the Ravens in training camp. Posey, obviously, the Grey Cup MVP last year, had a massive game. The reason I want to talk about this, Mike, and maybe I'm about to get into a feud with a player, but I feel like when this was announced, people went ape over it. Like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. Am I wrong in thinking people are kind of overrating him because of one game? Like and really, because of one catch, he had 175 yards, I think, in the Grey Cup. 100 of those yards came on one catch. And look, you can't just say, well, if you take away the biggest play, then look at the game he had. But I don't know. He had, like, I think just over 700 yards receiving in the regular season last year. I feel like people are making it out like Jerry Rice just came to the CFL. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this isn't – like, I think he's a good player. I'm not sure if he's a game breaker. What do you think? You think I'm an idiot?
No, I don't think you're an idiot at all. I think that obviously he had that 100-yard catch in the Grey Cup, and people are going to remember that because it was a spectacular play in a great Grey Cup game. But, yeah, the numbers don't bounce off the page. And maybe it's part of it is because he was in the NFL recently. And whenever a player goes to the NFL from the CFL, they gain and they come back. You know, there's that obvious, you know, thought that, hey, this guy is an NFL type caliber player. And maybe that's why some of the hype is so high for this guy. But I'm with you completely. I don't think that he is as good as people are making him out to be.
Well, the talk is that, oh, the Lions bring him in to replace Manny Arsenault. And I know Manny Arsenault's never really – I think he did get an NFL look a few years ago, but he's never really had an NFL look. But I think Manny Arsenault is it because he's not the fastest guy in the world. He's a little bit like Bakari Grant, but better. You know what I mean? Like, he's not a speed
bigger
demon,
in stature.
But he's bigger. Thick, like, yeah. But he is fast, but he's not super fast, right? Like, he's that type of player. Maybe not an NFL caliber player. He's perfectly suited for the CFL. They're saying, oh, Devere Posey is going to come in and replace Manny Arsenault. I think Manny Arsenault is a way better football player, way better receiver than Devere Posey, despite the fact that Posey gets NFL opportunities. Like, I feel like the Lions, and like, I feel like Posey himself is like, he's a good piece, but I don't think he's a number one guy. Like, I feel like people are looking at, he had a really good run and essentially a really good game in the biggest game that mattered. And they're using that to say, well, he's a superstar. I'm not sure he's a superstar.
I'm not sure either, Josh. I certainly don't see him taking Arsenault's spot. I mean, Arsenault has been a solid receiver for years and years, and he's still a solid receiver. So I like him as a piece that goes beside Arsenault, definitely not replacing him.
Okay, speaking of other moves, the Argos made a trade this week dealing returner and running back Martise Jackson to Edmonton for – I didn't write it down because, honestly, we're not going to sit here and break down the trade. That's not what we're here for. The question I have to you, Mike, is this the first domino to fall in Toronto? Do you feel like this is a trade that sort of precipitates other trades because the Argos have kind of thrown the towel in on this season?
Well, I mean, there's 3-8, but so are the Alouettes, and obviously the crossover is in play because I believe Winnipeg's 5-7, and they're in fourth in the West Division. I'm not sure they're throwing in the towel yet. But it doesn't look good, does it? I mean, you give up a returner that is honestly one of the most exciting returners in the league, one of the best guys to return the ball. So, and I think they actually got a sixth-round pick or something like that, so they didn't really get anything back, not for the present anyways. So I don't think they're throwing the towel in yet, but it doesn't look good optically. And that, you see on Twitter, James Wilder Jr., you know, reacting to this. And I don't think that's a good look for him either. He did the emoji, the facepalm emoji or something, but that's a different story.
I agree with you that it's not necessarily – like you look at that and go, well, he's throwing shade at the team that employs him. But you know what? I kind of like the fact that he's out there and is willing to make his opinion known. I honestly, like, yes, it might not be the smartest thing to do for the franchise, but as a fan of the league, to see a player react honestly, I'm down with that.
Yeah, you're right. I don't have a problem. I mean, we always complain when, you know, players use the cliches, but it's good to know that he actually cares about the team. It's probably more of a indication on how highly he thought of Jackson and not necessarily on the move. You know, he's a hell of a player. So yeah, I'm not going to beat him up too hard for that, even though, you know, we are arch nemesis.
Yeah, that's your other beef.
Yes.
We don't need to replay that one. New era. The Ticats, Jesus.
Just the Ticats.
The league will have a new uniform supplier in 2019. Oh, my God. I don't even know. I don't know where I am. I don't know who I'm talking about. I'm a complete mess right now. And it is New Era, the hat makers, which anytime I hear New Era, the only thing I think of is that line from the Limp Bizkit song. The way he shouts out New Era, the red cap. I don't know what it is off the top of my head because I don't listen to Limp Bizkit all that frequently in 2018, but I did in like 1999. But that's every time I hear New Era, that's the first thing that pops in my head. It's like, oh, that was from the Limp Bizkit song. I wear New Era hats, obviously, because I wear CFL apparently. I've been doing CFL hats for a long time. But what do you think, man? Adidas is out. We knew Adidas was going out. New Era has never made like on-field apparel. Like, they've never done jerseys before. So this is kind of a brand new thing for them. I think it's a little neat to see them go with someone new because I know that our boy Justin Dunk has said there won't be any redesigns in 2019, which, you know, thankfully, we have how many redesigns of jerseys have we had in the last 10 years? It seems like every other year we're getting these new jerseys for teams. But I'm kind of excited to see what these guys might be able to do when they get a chance to maybe update or tweak some of the uniforms around the league. And I'm curious to see what they can do with some apparel too because their hats are – pretty darn comfortable. So I'm kind of anxious to see what they could do in that line as well. What do you think?
Yeah, I think New Era does all the hats for MLB. I mean, they have a pretty good grasp on that market. But it's going to be interesting to see how they do in the uniform because, like you said, they haven't done any of that before. So I'm not hugely interested in the story. Like, obviously, I'm glad that they have a partner with Adidas backing out for whatever reason. But maybe New Era will take this opportunity and really, you know, launch them into the future of more than just a hat company. I'm hoping that they do a great job, obviously.
Okay, last bit of CFL news, Mike. We got to talk headshots, and that's because in the BC Lions Ottawa Redblacks game this past weekend, we saw a pair of, in my opinion, vicious and disgusting head hits on Travis Lule and Brian Burnham by a pair of Redblacks defenders. J.R. Tavey, I believe is his name. He hit Travis Lule in the chin with the crown of his helmet. The panel, after it happened, said that is a textbook case of spearing. Even if he didn't hit him in the head, if he would have hit him in the chest, it should have been a flag. It was not flagged. He was fined for the hit, but not suspended. And Avery Williams led with the crown of his helmet and obliterated Brian Burnham's head. The helmet popped off on the hit. And there was no flag, and I haven't heard anything about supplemental discipline, but obviously the hit on Lule is the one that everyone's talking about, where the hit on Burnham was the very next play, and it's kind of flown under the radar because Burnham's not a quarterback. But these two headshots happened, and for the league, and with no flags, and that's the thing I think we need to focus on. There was no flags thrown. The league talks about player safety, talks about getting this type of stuff out of the game, and they whiff on two consecutive plays with the chance to get this right, and they don't. That's not a good look for the league, in my opinion. Mike, what say you?
No, it's a very bad look. I mean, for all the player safety stuff that they push now, to miss two blatant headshots in a row is just unacceptable in 2018. So they need to get their crap together because they can't have this happening. I mean, Brian Burnham is a hell of a receiver, and it doesn't matter, you know, how good you are. You know, they should be trying to guard against all of these hits. But to have it with Travis Lule, a guy that has an injury past, you know, I'm sure he's suffered concussions before. It was more of a shoulder injury, knee injuries, kind of stuff like that. But you have to keep these players safe. And to not even be flagged on the plays is just, it's very worrisome.
So we're about to rag on the Red Blacks here. So before we do that, I'd like to take an aside and say, Henry Burris was fantastic as a color commentator in the Ticats Argos game. So this is not an indictment of the Red Blacks or anything like that. I'm capable of saying good things about you guys, so lay off me. This is three times now, and maybe four times if we count both of Kyrie Saber's hit, where we've seen vicious headshots by Red Blacks defenders. And where did Kyrie Saber come from, Mike? He came from Montreal. Who came from Montreal? That's Noel Thorpe, was a defensive coordinator there for many years. Where is he the defensive coordinator now? It's in Ottawa. I'm starting to wonder if not, like, yes, it's definitely still a Kyrie Saber thing, but now I'm starting to wonder if this is maybe a Noel Thorpe thing. And why is it seemingly that we watch these games around the league and I don't think I see this many helmet-to-helmet hits outside of Red Blacks games? Do you think this might be just the way Noel Thorpe is still continuing to teach the game of football? Because I hope that's not the case, and obviously we're speculating here. But this seems to follow him wherever he goes. Now, Kyrie Saber seems to follow him wherever he goes, so maybe that plays a role in it too. But neither of these had anything to do with Kyrie Saber, and they were still just hits you cannot make in 2018 in the game of football.
I'm trying to think of other players that were on the Alouettes for years and years where they were throwing headshots like Kyrie Saber, and I can't really – I know Chip Cox is known to be a little bit dirty, but he was never over the top like Ed Bear was. I'm not ready to say that necessarily, that it's a coaching thing from Noel Thorpe. I think that, you know, Kyrie Saber is Kyrie Saber. He's going to do that no matter what, and it's unfortunate because he's – you know, he ended one person's career, John Cornish, and he could end multiple others the way that he plays. But I'm just not sure that it's a coaching thing. It was two in a row, and that's very unfortunate. But I think that maybe they were just the players that did it. I don't think that Noel Thorpe is coaching up these guys to take dirty hits.
Okay, Mike, let's talk about this week's Ticats game, and it is, in my opinion, not only the game of the week, but based on the numbers that I'm about to throw at you, it could end up being the game of the year. It stamps at Ticats, and man, Calgary's offense, number one in points for, number two in yards, number two in time of possession. Their defense, number one in points allowed, number one in yards allowed. Hamilton's offense, number two in points for, number one in yards, number one in time possession, and the defense, number two in points allowed, number two in yards allowed. Dude, this is a heavyweight title fight in football form. I think, based on the numbers, based on the way these teams have been playing, Ticats recently, Calgary throughout the whole year, it might be inarguable that these are the two best teams in the league right now. This is going to be a fun one on Saturday. The Stamps enter at 9-2 after losing their Labor Day rematch to Edmonton, but obviously they still sit atop the West Division. Ticats come into this game 6-5, winners of their last three, including two over the Argos, and they are tied atop the East with Ottawa. The Ticats, this is, like, every time I think of this, it's crazy. Ticats have not defeated Calgary since a beautiful fall day back in Moncton, New Brunswick, 7 years ago. When these two teams met in the second Touchdown Atlantic game, Ticats won that 55-36. I believe we were both in attendance for that one, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Since then, this number is ridiculous. The Ticats have lost 14 straight to Calgary, including a certain heartbreaking loss in the 2014 Grey Cup. Mike, though, I think that this is probably the best Hamilton team that the Stamps will have faced since that 2011 loss. So, Mike, this is the question I pose to you. Is this the week that the streak finally ends? Do the Ticats beat the Stamps? Yes or no?
Yes, and here's why. The Ticat offense is on fire. The Calgary defense, although it's near the top of the league in, you know, the stats, it's been fading a bit in the last couple of weeks. They allowed 40-plus against the Riders, and then 40-plus against the Edmonton Eskimos last week. So with Hamilton's offense clicking on all cylinders right now, Calgary's defense taking a little bit of a nosedive, I think that's one of the reasons why the Hamilton Tiger Cats pull out a victory and finally beat the Calgary Stampeders after way too long. Also, the defense is going to play that cover zero that they like to play, where they put the safety and he comes up and he covers the underneath routes, and they just play man-to-man on the deep routes. I don't think Bo Levi Mitchell is going to be able to hit enough of those deep routes. And you look at, you know, the teams we played, you know, Mike Riley hasn't had his best games against this defense, who played a lot of that certain coverage. I think the same thing is going to happen this week against the Calgary Stampeders. And the last reason, the most important reason, is we're due, damn it. We have to beat the Calgary Stampeders eventually, and this is going to be the week.
I love everything you're saying, Mike, but obviously we know that I have to take the opposite opinion of you, and I have to tell you why the Ticats are not going to break the streak this week. One reason, Calgary just doesn't lose two in a row. They lost three in a row at the end of last year, but that was when they had everything clinched and those games didn't really matter, so it's hard to really take that and say, oh, look, they lost. No. The last time the Stamps lost two games in a row that mattered was weeks 2 and 3 in 2012. 2012. It's been over 6 years since this team lost back-to-back games that mattered. The Stamps obviously lost last week in Edmonton. This would be two in a row. They just don't lose two in a row very often. Second reason, we touched on it a little earlier. The Ticats don't get a ton of pressure and they don't get a ton of sacks. And if you give Bo Levi Mitchell a chance back there to sit back there, find an open receiver, he's going to pick this defense apart as good as they are. They have to find a way to get pressure or Mitchell is going to have a field day. And last but certainly not least, they just don't beat Calgary, man. I said it, yeah. 14 straight they've lost to this team. It's got to end sometimes, but until it does, I'm not sure that I can really sit here and go, it's going to happen, man. It's just, it's one of those things that's been so long since I've seen it, I kind of don't even remember it happening before.
I know, and it wasn't even at home or away. It was like a neutral game site. Yeah. Like, it was a, you know, I remember it was Kevin Glenn against Burris, and we had a great day, you know.
Marcus,
it was a great
Dick
game
had
for the Tiger
Cats. Touchdowns. Like,
yeah, on a missed field goal, he returned a touchdown. So, yeah, I can't argue with your reasons, but it's just they're not going to lose this game. They can't. I remember I picked in the first game of the season, I picked the Ticats to beat the Stampeders, and I was wrong. And you know that I'm never wrong twice in a row. So that's the one. I add that to the reasons that they'll win.
You know what? And the thing that we have to remember is the Ticats lost that game by 2 scores. But they were driving to take the lead late in that game until Mazzoli threw an interception. Mm-hmm. Bo Levi Mitchell had one of his worst games as a pro against this defense that wasn't as good as the defense we see. Delvin Bro was not in the lineup against the Stampeders. He had not signed with the team yet. There are little things in this that, like, I honestly believe this is going to be one hell of a football game, and I am so glad that I'm going to be able to sit there and watch it live. Because I like I said at the top of this, I think this could be one of the games of the year. I honestly do. I think these two teams right now are so evenly matched. They're so good at what they do that something's got to give. And I really hope that that thing that gives is Calgary's win streak here. Because very beginning of the show, when we were talking about the last game, I said the Ticats are for real. If they win this game, I think it's undisputed that they are the team to beat in the East. And they are probably the number two Grey Cup contender behind Calgary. You know what I mean? Like, I think a win here and every single doubter of this team, whether you doubt the quarterback or you doubt teams will figure out June Jones, which is something we haven't talked about, but that's kind of something that's gone by the wayside, right? Like, June Jones is still pretty successful as a coach in this league, despite teams having film on him. Whatever your objections to this Ticats team is, whether you're a fan of the Ticats or you're not a fan of the Ticats and you don't believe in them, if they win this game on Saturday, I think everyone has to become a believer in this team.
Absolutely. I mean, if they beat Calgary, they would have beat them once. They beat Edmonton twice. You know, unfortunately, they lost twice to Saskatchewan, so we won't get another shot at them in the regular season. But yeah, you got to believe that everyone will take them more seriously if they put a W up against the, you know, arguably the best team in the league right now.
All right, everybody. That was Podski Weeby for this week. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Beat the Stamps.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.